Three championship wins from three. Norwich City's season is well and truly up and running after a victory at the Stadium of Light against Sunderland. But all was not as it may have seemed, as we will delve into in this week's edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast in association with Future Radio. My name is Connor Southall, joined by Paddy Dowitt and Sam Seaman to reflect on a weekend that saw Norwich City beat Sunderland 1-0, courtesy of a Josh Sargent goal. As I said right at the top, they found a bit of form. Maybe performances, certainly on this occasion, weren't necessarily where they need to be, but they have found a winning formula. So, Paddy, if I come to you first and foremost, I mean, we spent the first 3 weeks of the season essentially questioning whether this Norwich City side would be able to produce this run of form, would be able to produce a run of results like this. They have. It feels like they're evolving, they're moving in the right direction. And as we've kind of said in the last 24 hours or so, a real quality of a good team is perhaps when they can win games, even when they don't necessarily play at their best, which is what Norwich City did on Saturday.
Yeah, they certainly did that on Saturday, Connor. Funny enough, I've seen a tweet this morning and it was drawing a parallel with, because of course, post-modernist take on Farco was that every week they put teams to the sword, certainly that first championship season when they got into their stride and it was lovely, aesthetically pleasing football. But I can't think now for the life of me, but they referenced a game or two where it was very similar in terms of backs against the wall, having to dig in, ride their luck, which Norwich certainly did at the Stadium of Light. Combination of heroic defending led by Grant Hanley and the woodwork on occasion. Although it's worth pointing out, you know, Tim Krul wasn't really required to make too many top draw saves. So, you know, maybe it was just the incessant pressure that conveyed this impression that Norwich were clinging on by their fingertips. But I think it, given Smith made a triple change just approaching the hour mark, that did indicate that he felt something quite drastically needed to alter in terms of the balance of that game. And fair play to him, fair play to the players who he put on. They from there on, I felt, exerted that control, maybe allied to Sunderland running out a little bit of steam because they put huge amounts of effort and energy and endeavour into that first hour. And of course, one moment of quality, both in terms of the creation and the execution, was enough to get the 3 points. And, you know, you only take your measure from the full-time whistle, I think, and the celebrations, the type of celebrations, those Norwich players, the amount who were hugging each other and, you know, fist-pumping and saluting the away supporters as they did. They, and of course, you spoke to Andrew Mbamba Daly, key figure in that defensive effort after the game, and he I think he said it best, those are the type of games in adversity where a team grows and forges that collective spirit and unity. And you could see that visually, I thought, at the final whistle. And in the bigger picture, cliche though it is, but if you can go to a team who hadn't lost at home since February, who'd picked up 8 points from their first five, only lost one league game, and you can go and play nowhere near your best with and without the ball, and yet come back on the road with a clean sheet and 3 points, that bodes well for the future. And, you know, I think when the dust settles, while they're not happy probably with the performance level, Dean Smith certainly wasn't happy with the performance level or elements of it, I think they'll derive a huge amount from that moving forward, because we've seen it twice under Farker at this level. You can't play at your best every week or every Saturday, Tuesday. You need to dig in. And when you're not at your best, still grind out results. And boy, did they do that on Saturday. So a little bit concerning in terms of that first hour, but I think overall, hugely encouraging for what comes ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. A very interesting way. It's interesting what you said about pressure, because I would agree. It doesn't feel, I mean, Tim Krul made one excellent save from Ross Stewart in the second half, pushing a shot onto the bar. There were a couple of last-ditch blocks, but maybe it was the last-ditch nature of some of their defending, which made it feel a little bit like a smash and grab rather than perhaps it was. I actually felt in the last 20 minutes or so, Norwich were relatively comfortable. Certainly after they scored the goal, they managed the game probably a lot better, certainly than they did on Tuesday night in the Cup. Sam, I mean, to kind of reflect on that, I think there's been kind of a lot of conversation over the summer about whether this group would be hungry enough, would be willing enough to put their bodies on the line in championship games, because they've been here before, because they've won championship titles before. I think you only needed to watch Grant Hanley scramble back on the line to get in the way of Alex Pritchard's volley as evidence that this is a group willing to fight and roll their sleeves up when need be, and willing to engage in the arm wrestles that the championship does serve up from time to time.
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of an easy argument when things aren't going well, as they weren't towards the back end of last, well, for the whole of last season, really. It's an easy argument to make that the players don't care, or they're not putting effort in, or they're not willing to put themselves on the line. I think Dean Smith actually spoke about it at a sort of event he did with fans, where he was challenged on that. And he said he's basically never worked with a footballer that wasn't dedicated to trying and dedicated to doing what he could to win for the football club. And I think that's definitely the case with Norwich. The reality is that previously they've just not been good enough, and they've not maybe been physical enough, but it's not for want of trying. And I think we saw that, obviously, as you referenced yesterday, Grant Hanley putting himself in a good deal of pain a couple of times during the game yesterday, and they were capable of getting through it. I think it would be incorrect to maybe diagnose it as a physical performance, and one where they dominated Sunderland and got through a lack of technical quality by using their strength, because I still feel like physically, especially in the midfield, where that tends to matter, they were sort of outdone and they weren't up to scratch, but they did what they could in the box. And I think when you look at that defence, Grant Hanley and Andrew Omobamadele, there's certainly not going to be any physical problems with that duo at championship level, and I thought they stood up to the battle pretty well. So yeah, obviously it's important in the championship, as Paddy referenced, to be able to grind out those results when maybe technically you're struggling. They really struggled against Sunderland's press, and you know that was a team that was absolutely willing to fight, but in the end their quality told one big moment towards the end of the game, and they just needed to ride out that period, and they were there, really. So yeah, I thought it showed some really pleasing elements, and certainly some things that throughout the course of the season they're going to have to reproduce, probably not on a regular basis. You know, Dean Smith won't want to have to reproduce that on a regular basis, but you know, there's certainly going to be times when they're not at their best, and they're going to need those blocks on the goal line, and they're going to need players throwing themselves in front of the ball, and you're certainly going to get that from players like Grant Hanley, Andrew Omobamadele, Tim Krul, Kenny McLean, and you know, I think that's going to be a very valuable attribute for them going forwards.
Absolutely, and actually, I was kind of looking into their last title winning campaign, and for all perhaps the memories of that 7-0 win against Huddersfield Town, the free flowing excellent brand of football, I think they won 17 games by a single goal, Paddy. So it goes to show these are actually the type of victories that you do kind of build promotions and title wins on, because they're the ones that, as Andrew Omobamadele said after the game, they're ones that perhaps everyone looks back and looks at and says, oh, well, actually, maybe we could have dropped points there and we could have walked away with 1 point instead of three. And Norwich City did that yesterday. It felt like the type of win that a team hoping to be at the top end of the table manages to get themselves through.
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, that's a great stat. If it was 17, I must confess, I didn't know it was quite as high as that, but if it was 17-1 goal victories, then, you know, that was pretty much a fundamental pillar of that second title under Farkas' stewardship. And I think certainly in this early phase as well, you're probably going to get days, and we've seen it already, you know, in the first six games, days when Norwich aren't really firing on all cylinders. And there will be areas of a performance, even a performance that results in a win and a clean sheet, as it did on Saturday, where you think, well, that isn't good enough and they need to address that moving forward. But, you know, wrote about it in my pointers yesterday, what a foundation they've got now. You know, is it 10 points from the opening six games, I think, off the top of my head? They've climbed from, as much as you want to place any store by league positions at this stage, but, you know, from rock bottom to, I think they're in the top four now after this weekend's fixtures. They have the platform now for Dean Smith to kick on and start to work on the floors. They've got the base of the house constructed, I think. They've got a defensive unit, you know, subject to any sort of dramatic twist involving Max Aarons between now and Thursday's transfer deadline. You know, I like the look of Byram if he stays fit on that left-hand side, irrespective of Yiannoulis and McCallum becoming available again in a couple of months. So you can already see now, with Omobamadele and Hanley, of course, and Krul behind them, that defensive platform is in place, and now it's just really intriguing how this evolves, you know, in terms of the midfield positions and the forward areas. But as was referenced by the fact that his team news dropped an hour before kickoff on Saturday morning, no Eder, no Hugel, no Rashica, and yet they can still bring on Timu Puki, Aaron Ramsey, Todd Cantwell, keep Gabby Zara in reserve on the bench. That's a cast list both in depth and quality. I don't think any other championship squad can rival. So ultimately, the onus then is on Smith. You've got the resource, you've got the talent in abundance, it would appear, for this level. Now you need to maximise it, distill it, and really, injury and suspension allowing, find an 11 that week in, week out are a cut above this league, and that from this position now they go on and prove that and find that consistency both in results, importantly, obviously, but also performance levels with and without the ball. And if they get that, you know, it's very hard to see teams in the championship most weeks being able to live with them. But, you know, the hard work needs to continue because, you know, we saw in those first three championship games, if you take your foot off it at this level, you will get found out, and teams will maybe through effort and endeavour and lacking probably the technical abilities that a Norwich squad possess, but still can counteract if Norwich aren't willing to do the elements you need. And they did so successfully at Sunderland to get a result. So, yeah, if you're a Norwich fan now, I think you've got to be hugely positive and hugely encouraged. The last three games that they've now started to see real signs of maybe one result here or there. This is the start of a trend, be it defensive resolution and that platform, or at the top end of the pitch, what Josh Sargent is doing now. And in midfield, Nunes, you know, what he continues to do as well. So really exciting, I think, now to look forward and see how this Norwich team go from here and how they evolve.
Yeah, that's the word I was going to use, evolve, evolution. It's kind of what it feels like Norwich City are doing at this moment in time. It doesn't quite feel like they're even in their sort of full form yet, so to speak. So it's going to be interesting to watch how that process continues over the weeks ahead. Sam, how much credit does Dean Smith deserve for this victory? Because as we spoke about, the midfield, the whole shape I thought was pretty stretched, but the midfield in particular wasn't really functioning perhaps in the way that Norwich would have likely. They obviously lost Liam Gibbs early on with an ankle injury, and we'll come back to that later. But Kieran Dowell, Nunez were struggling. I think Sunderland were probably winning the physical battle in there. The nature of their stretch shape meant that they were quite easy to play through as well. So Sunderland were having a fair bit of joy in possession, which other teams perhaps haven't had this season. And Dean Smith does make a triple change. He brings on Aaron Ramsey, Timo Pukki, Todd Cantwell. Does move Sargent to the right. Pukki goes up front, and actually it's two of the substitutes, isn't it? Ramsey, Pukki, then to Nunez, then back to Ramsey, then to Sargent that combine for the goal. So how much credit does Dean Smith deserve to take for that? It was also a tactical change against Millwall that he made as well that kind of tipped the game in Norwich City's favour. So for all of maybe the criticism that there's been of Norwich City's head coach, and there's been plenty, not just from last season, but also at the start of this campaign, it feels like we're slowly beginning to see some progress in that direction as well.
Yeah, I think he certainly deserves credit for those substitutions, and not only because of the obvious impact it had, but I think solution-wise, it maybe wasn't the obvious one that a lot of fans would have picked out. They had Gabriel Sara on the bench, who, you know, by all accounts, has been brought in to provide those legs and that physicality that Norwich were clearly lacking in midfield. And instead, he brought on Aaron Ramsey, Tamo Pukki and Todd Cantwell, three players who I would say are less than associated with the physical side of the game. But that still pulled things around, and it still made the tactical change to the game that Smith was hoping to achieve. So, yeah, I think it was a massive element in that. You've also got to give him credit for the signing of Ramsey, really. And I know that's taking it back a little while, but arguably, looking at the financial package that's probably going to cost them, has he maybe already paid back what Norwich have invested with his contribution to that goal? And, you know, he's very much Smith's player. He's very much somebody who Smith has been telling Norwich fans to wait and see as to the impact he can have and the impact that Smith has been saying he's going to have. And, you know, this early on in the season, to see him have such a tangible impact on a big, big result for Norwich, really, with such a quality assist, I think is a big achievement and something that Smith should be proud of. You know, he's, as you said, taken a lot of criticism, and we've had this discussion before where I don't think there's a single manager on the world that would have kept Norwich up in the Premier League, to be honest. Their squad just wasn't good enough. So it was almost a sort of clean slate for him. And he obviously took a lot of criticism at the start of the season for the way that they started the campaign. But yeah, we're starting to see what a Dean Smith side looks like now, and we're starting to see the sort of elements that he can add to a side. And yeah, I thought those substitutions, despite being different to maybe what a lot of fans would have gone for. Really made the best of a very difficult situation in that Liam Gibbs was obviously forced off a lot earlier than anybody would have anticipated, and that left them in a very difficult situation with the midfield. I think, yes, they maybe looked to lack that physicality and that strength when Kenny McLean went in there, obviously flanked by Kieran Dowell and Marcelino Nunez, who aren't associated with physicality at all. But, you know, I think had Liam Gibbs retained his fitness throughout the game, I think that probably wouldn't have ended up being as big a problem as it was. So Smith was thrown into a situation where he really had to adapt, and, you know, he did it early enough. I think Daniel Farke, his predecessor, was obviously criticised quite often for making his substitutions too late in the game and failing to have an impact. You know, with that, we saw a lot of players brought on around 80, 85 minutes, but Smith early on recognised the change needed to be made. 60 minutes, he brought on those three subs and they had the desired impact. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for yesterday's result. And had he not shown his nous in that situation, I think it's very unlikely Norwich would have come away from the stadium in flight with 3 points.
Yeah, I think Norwich fans have felt slightly underwhelmed by Aaron Ramsey, having watched him in the cameos that they've seen so far. He obviously missed a massive opportunity at Hull, which would have brought the game level. And maybe then the narrative around his contribution so far gets framed a little bit differently. He wasn't particularly great in the cup game in midweek, I didn't think. But this was much improved, Pat, I felt, in terms of his all-round contribution, but also specifically for the goal that Sam referenced there. It's not necessarily just the ball in either. I think the touch to kind of push the ball in front of him whilst he's running at full pelt, essentially, is an unbelievably hard thing to do, to take that into a stride and push it into a place to then create the cross. It was an excellent couple of touches that really created a goal pretty much from nothing for Norwich City.
No doubt about it. I think I put it in my ratings that was his best, I felt, impact so far in a Norwich shirt. And we could talk about the goal, but within 3 minutes of him coming on, he picked the ball up in that left-hand area, committed defenders, and then right weight on the pass for Josh Sargent, who checked onto his left, fired over, but clearly those two combined later on to match winning effect. And I just thought there was a composure when he was on the ball, and the quality isn't in doubt, because ultimately what Norwich have there is a player who's rightly regarded as one of the best for his age in the country. He scored for England's under-19s to win European Championships in the summer. He won the FA Youth Cup when he was at Villa, where he worked closely with Liam Bramley, one of Smith's, you know, coaching team at Carr Road now. So, again, you know, we forget maybe a very, very young player, and it will take time. He's probably moved away from Birmingham for the first time in his very young life, and there's all that off-the-field element. You know, you have to feel comfortable in his surroundings and also he's going into a different dressing room, different players to the ones he's used to, and that takes time to build relationships. And, you know, we focus so much on Zara and Nunez and how they're going to adapt and the challenges they face, but it's probably to a degree the same for a very young man in Aaron Ramsey. And that really was a leap forward, I think, because he came on and he affected the game in a very positive manner, and the quality that he showed on the ball was too good for Sunderland. So, yeah, we won't get carried away from here, because, again, he is a young player, and with young players come peaks and troughs in performance. I don't think suddenly there should be a clamour for him to start games, but I think he underlined for the first time in a Norwich shirt on Saturday that maybe what Smith has been talking about, that there is a very intelligent young footballer with a lot of talent who can really have a major say on Norwich at the top end of the pitch. And, again, goes back to the earlier point we discussed, the embarrassment of riches that he's got now in the final third, I think is unrivaled in the Championship. And, you know, it'll be good for that young man's confidence as well, because I'm sure that the Hull miss particularly would have weighed heavy on him as well. He will have known he should have slotted that, and the game might have had a different outcome that afternoon. But to get, as Smith said, his first career landmark assist under his belt at senior level, you'd think that should only kick him on further. And it'll be interesting now going back to Birmingham, of course, midweek and Birmingham City, you know, what role Smith has earmarked for him, because I didn't think Onel Hernandez particularly, you know, pushed his claims. You've got Cantwell in the conversation, and now after that cameo, I think Ramsey is in the conversation as well. And the more options, as Dean Smith keeps saying, the better. And leaving good players in the stands, so be it. Because what that means is those on the pitch are doing the business, and by definition, Norwich are picking up the results they need to stay at the top end of the table. So, yeah, of the overall elements to that win yesterday, I think Ramsey's emergence as a real creative option was a real big plus.
Absolutely, and I'm sure as a player of Aston Villa, he will be relishing the chance to go to Birmingham City on Tuesday night and try and make an impact there. Also, probably a massive injection of confidence for him, the fact that Dean Smith, Craig Shakespeare, Liam Bramley, all the people making those team selection decisions seemingly have him ahead of Milo Rashica in the pecking order at this moment in time, because obviously he was included in the matchday squad and Milo Rashica was not, and we'll come back to that situation in probably a little bit more detail later on in the show. Sam, it was an interesting situation that Norwich City kind of walked into at the Stadium of Light, because we obviously had the situation with Alex Neil, who, as we are recording this at midday on Sunday, is still Sunderland boss, but was absent for the game on Saturday. At Saturday lunchtime, he was instead watching Stoke City against Blackburn ahead of taking charge of Stoke City in the not so distant future, I would imagine. And this all kind of developed on Friday, where he was scheduled to have a 9 o'clock press conference. That got pushed back. Then reports of Sunderland granting permission to Stoke because of a clause in his contract, which essentially allows any club that finished higher than Sunderland last season to speak with him, should they wish to, about their managerial vacancy, which of course is all of the Championship, given that Sunderland, and some in League One actually as well, given that Sunderland were in League One last season. He's obviously taken that opportunity. He will become the next manager of Stoke. But that left almost as we walked into the Stadium of Light, Stuart described it as a rudderless ship. So that kind of shows what Norwich City were walking into. But actually, that Sunderland performance was spirited. It did seem to galvanise not just those on the pitch, but also those off the pitch. There was quite a bit of togetherness, I felt, within that football club. It was a siege mentality, to use that cliche. And for the first 10 minutes, you could probably even stretch that to the first half, if anyone was thinking that there was going to be a hangover or that chaos was going to spread from off the pitch onto the pitch, then they were really mistaken, weren't they?
Yeah, and I think anyone in any doubt as to how Sunderland fans would react to Alex Neil's impending departure were seen to early doors when there was some colourful language used around the description of the Scot. And I think, yeah, Sunderland fans reacted to it in the way that probably the team would have hoped for. They really sort of, it galvanised them, as you said, really. And the atmosphere was absolutely bouncing at the Stadium of Light. I haven't been there in a good while, so difficult for me to say what it's like every week. But if they're turning out performances like that every week off the pitch, then I think it's only going to bode well for those responsible for results on it. And, you know, credit to Sunderland where it's due. I thought they whipped up a real atmosphere that actually made it uncomfortable for Norwich. And I'm currently working on a column where I'm discussing the problems with Norwich away from home, because I think they have struggled maybe. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's to do with the pressure on them compared to obviously at Carrow Road, where everybody wants them to succeed and everybody wants them to do well. But each of the away games that Norwich have been part of now have followed a similar pattern. They've been under the cosh, really, and subject to quite a significant press and quite a lot of pressure and physicality from the opposition. It's been typical Championship away games, what we've seen on the road so far. So it is interesting to see if Norwich can develop out of that, and if they can, as they have previously under, obviously, Daniel Farke, assert themselves almost in the home team role against opposition away from home. I think at the moment, if they can manage to grind out results like they did at Sunderland, then, you know, that's all they can do, and that's probably going to be enough. But long term, you'd say that's probably not a sustainable model to go and be dominated by teams and somehow come out of it. So, yeah, I don't think it was a great look for Norwich, the way that they were perhaps impacted by that atmosphere, but it certainly made things more difficult for them. I thought first half especially, it was almost like the Sunderland press was working in unison with the fans and how they were getting them up for it. And it felt like a bit of a cauldron that Norwich were in, such as our position in the press box. It didn't really feel like we were part of it. It almost felt like we were slightly above the action and slightly above what the players had to experience. But from being there, it felt like watching on, you know, the Norwich players would have heard every word, and they really would have experienced that from the Sunderland supporters. So yeah, I thought credit to Norwich for coming out of that and managing to hold firm somehow, you know, via crossbar, Grant Hanley, as we spoke about earlier. But yeah, I thought they were really under the cosh from that atmosphere. And it will be interesting to see, because there's certainly going to be championship atmospheres that are going to be comparable to that in future. It's going to be interesting to see how they're impacted by that and if they can overcome that and assert themselves. I actually spoke to a couple of fans before the game for our social channels, and I asked them if it was important that Norwich sort of stamped their authority on the game and went on the front foot to make it about them rather than about the circus which they were part of. And, you know, those fans seemed to think that it was the case. It's what I personally think would have been best for Norwich, and they didn't manage to do that. And I think you saw the impact, but, you know, such is the Championship rather than the Premier League. The quality of the players they're up against is probably what let them off the hook at times yesterday. And I think they probably will manage to get results in those sorts of atmospheres in future. But I think, you know, going forward, it's going to be important that they get on the ball early, quieten those home fans, and make it about them a little bit more in future.
We live Norwich City.
The build-up.
The passion. The drama.
The last-minute winners.
The debate.
That's why we've created Pinkham Plus. Pinkham Plus. The app that takes you beyond the headlines.
With exclusive columns, blogs, podcasts and videos, we've got you covered.
Subscribe today. Pinkham Plus. Stay ahead of the game.
Download now on the App Store and on Google Play.
Yeah, I didn't think their performance in possession was particularly great yesterday, and both Dean Smith and Andrew Mamardelli kind of hinted at that, actually. I think, you know, we mentioned the Sunderland press, which I felt was pretty good, but equally when Norwich were taking quite a few touches, it does make it a lot easier to press. So there's probably an element of one helping the other in that regard. Pad, we've got 28 minutes into the pod and we've not mentioned Josh Sargent, who is absolutely on fire. Not going to sing the chant, but he is in a goal scoring point of view. It's now, what is it, four goals for him in three games. This one actually came after he'd been moved to the right wing, but the movement for it, I mean, we've mentioned Aaron Ramsey's contribution, and also the really intelligent build-up. Timu Pukki played a really important role, and I thought was pretty lively actually when he came off the bench on Saturday. But the movement was very much typical of a centre forward, across one of the defenders, getting to the near post or into a position where he could then tap it into the net, actually. And it's those type of goals that, although they're probably not the most watchable in terms of, it's not a 40-yard screamer, it's not a thumping header, it's a tap in from inside the 6-yard box. Actually, the way it was crafted and the movement was probably as important and as or signs of him being a central striker as that finish against Millwall was, or the second one, and the play there. So we're beginning to see all of the elements that perhaps we didn't associate with Josh Sargent last year into this season, which is really good to see. But he's a player who is clearly feeding off confidence and is, well, massively in form.
Well, you touch on it there, and we talked about it, about Ramsey, confidence, and it's that intangible that must be maddening for coaches, because I'm not sure how they actually get that quality. I mean, you can work on all manner of tactical elements and structure and shape and one-to-one coaching. We know Dean Smith and his coaches are very big on that aspect as well. But nothing beats, if you're a striker, to go and score goals and feel that adulation and that love from the terraces. And that's been fairly elusive for Josh Sargent since he arrived at Norwich, up to this burst that he's now gone on. And it's really pleasing that he's maintaining it. You know, it wasn't as it was in that Premier League spiral. It was the high point of Watford and the brace he got that night, and then, you know, no more goals came for the rest of the season. He's backed it up, and he's backed it up again. And the point that you make, which is the one Smith made, that it was actually when he'd been redeployed or repositioned slightly on the right-hand side, which hitherto he has struggled to get into goal-scoring positions. But you know, the finish is routine, but what isn't is that the sense of anticipation that he could get himself in that position, in the width of the posts. And that is a striker. That is a striker's instinct. And now the body of work and the goals he scored, the range of goals, he is showcasing the attributes you would associate with an actual out-and-out centre-forward who can be a residual goal threat. And you referenced Timu Pukki. I don't think it's any coincidence that when he went on, he looked a bit like a man possessed, because he will see how the wind is blowing and that his hegemony has now been threatened, probably for the first time since he assumed the mantle from Jordan Rhodes at the start of the first title winning season under Farker. And he needs to up his game. You know, he needs to maybe rediscover that edge that hasn't quite been there at the start of the season. And, you know, it in terms of the competition that you've got from front to back, I think that competition that's now in play at the top end of the pitch, we've not even touched on Adam Eder, bar to recognise that he didn't even make the squad, yet he gets an opportunity off the bench against Bournemouth, scores a goal. And fundamentally, if you're Dean Smith, you want as many goal scoring options as you could find to spark each other into really week in, week out. Right, I've got an opportunity today. If I don't, you know, score goals, get on the end of chances, then I know there's other options and I'll be out the side. So it's great that Josh Sargent has grasped his opportunity, but it's also, I thought it was good to see that Timu, because we know his attitude would be such that he wouldn't have the hump. He would be of the mind that, right, I need to maybe work harder. I need to show more to you know, just keep this youngster at bay. And if the byproduct is Norwich scoring goals and winning games, then long may it continue. So, yeah, again, a bit like Ramsey, we won't get carried away and suddenly start to portray him as the new Drogba or the new, I don't know, Lewandowski. But what he is, clearly, is a player at championship level and an ever-expanding sample can score goals. And that's great to see moving forward because, as we've touched on in previous podcasts, his best years are definitely ahead of him. And we know all about the other elements that he brings to the party, his work rate, his endeavour, his selflessness, his athleticism. But if you add goal to that, then you've got a serious player on your hands.
And so the Ginger Drogba was born. What a way to do it. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Championship top goal scoring charts at the moment, Oscar Estepinian of Hull City, right up there, got a hat-trick yesterday. He scored 7 goals in 6 games, which is a remarkable start to his Championship career. Colombian striker that they managed to sign on a free transfer, I believe. Josh Brownhill and Josh Sargent below him with 4 goals. But actually, you look at the goals per 90 rates of each of those, and Josh Sargent has the best. At the minute, he's averaging a goal per 90 minutes from 13 shots. Those 4 goals have come. Goal conversion rate of 31%, shot accuracy of 54%. So those are statistics that, if he can maintain, will put him in a very healthy position come May. But it is, as Paddy referenced there, this is at the moment just a decent run of form, and he needs to convert a decent run of form into a prolonged spell of Championship productivity. And if he can do that, then maybe the conversation will flip as to how Norwich relieve the burden on Timu Pukki to how they relieve the goal-scoring burden on Josh Sargent. But from Dean Smith's perspective, certainly not a bad position to be in. What I did want to mention was Liam Gibbs. I mean, we mentioned him earlier on, Sam. He's been really good, actually, since the start of pre-season, I think. We've spoken about him a lot and probably spoken about him positively a lot as well. It's really interesting to hear at the moment how keen he is to distance himself from being an Ipswich fan. Whether he is or not, I don't know. But it's just interesting that's the approach he's taken. I don't really see why it's relevant personally, but there you go. It's obviously funny. But he has been so good in that sixth role and has kind of been mature beyond his years, I think, with a lot of his performances. Obviously, was beginning to really forge a role in that team, in that midfield, and was helping with the balance of it. The injury, which obviously Dean Smith wasn't able to give a full assessment on beyond the fact he was in a protective boot and on crutches, as is always the case when anyone gets any kind of ankle or foot injury or knee injury or whatever during a game, but looked to be a fairly nasty one from replays. Looks like he's rolled his ankle, had to be helped off the pitch by 2 physios, was getting booed by Sunderland fans for some reason. How dare he have the audacity to be injured. If he is out for any prolonged period of time, and obviously we hope that's not the case, and we'll probably get a better assessment on terms of what his injury is and how long he's out for from Dean Smith on a Monday's press conference ahead of the Birmingham game. But it would be a massive blow, not just for him, but also for Norwich City. And that's a testament to the role that he's probably created for himself in the last 2 months or so.
Yeah, I think it's a blow probably to an underrated extent, because the fact that he's come in and done so well has almost felt like a bit of a bonus for Norwich. I don't think anybody was counting on him to do so well in that role when they were looking to address that sort of big hole in defensive midfield that they had last season. But now they're in a situation where probably their only three holding defensive midfielders are all injured. Isaac Hayden looks like he's a decent way from coming back. Jakob Sorensen, as we know, is a good way away from returning from injury. And now Liam Gibbs, the way that he limped off so slowly did worry me personally in terms of how soon we'll see him back. Obviously, I don't want to bring unnecessary doom and gloom before we've had that verdict from Dean Smith, but I'd say the chances of him featuring on Tuesday are extremely low, and beyond then it could be even more of a worry, because not only is it a blow in that area, the fact that it takes Kenny McLean away from left back, almost certainly there's not really any other viable option, and Kenny McLean probably is guaranteed to start at least until Isaac Hayden returns, you'd think. But the fact that he's going to have to play there means you've only got injury-prone Sam Byram, who, you know, let's remember, isn't even a career left-back. Yes, he's done well in that position before, and he did pretty well yesterday. But, you know, he's a right-footer. He's typically featured as a right-back or on the right side for teams. And he's the only option they have now, because Kenny McLean can't really go and slot in there if he gets injured. The only option then would be really to have Gabriel Sarr as a six, and he looks to me to be somewhere between an 8 and a 10, the way that he played against Bournemouth in the Cup. So I think the ripples it has are probably as much of an impact as just having Liam Gibbs out of the side, but equally, he's been ultra impressive for Norwich, and I think a big part of them turning around their form, it was becoming a theme from their opening games, was that lack of control in midfield, the amount of space that players had on the edge of the box, and the ease with which they were getting almost from the halfway line to the edge of the box. I think Gibbs helped ease that, and that's the sort of solution which it's hard to pick out, and you don't really remember from watching a game, but it's certainly something, if you look at the amount of chances they've conceded, it's something since Gibbs got into the team, it's something that they've improved on. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they adapt. I don't think the signs were particularly good at Sunderland, given how easily they found space in and around the Norwich box at times yesterday, but no, it doesn't look good going forward. And I think it's probably, from a PR standpoint, good news for Norwich that happened in the middle of a win, because I think it would have been seen as a major, major blow had it come as part of a defeat or even a draw. So, maybe those cracks have been papered over a little bit, but it's another dilemma for Dean Smith to look at. And if there's another injury to add to that growing list, it feels like Norwich City just can't get away from the curse of the injury crisis in the Championship. So we'll see how they cope with that. But it's certainly going to be an interesting task seeing how they get around that for probably at least the short to mid-term.
Yeah, if I was a left-back or a defensive midfielder playing for Norwich City at the moment, I'd be watching over my shoulder, because that seems to be the two positions that are really, really hampered with injuries at the moment. Obviously, Isaac Hayden is still out. We're yet to see him kick a ball in a yellow and green shirt. The kind of timeline that Dean Smith presented to us and has presented to us is the end of August. We're now at the end of August, so we'll be seeking an update from him in terms of his fitness and how close he is to it. Of course, given the fact that he basically didn't have a pre-season at all, we'll probably push that back even further than perhaps it would for someone like Gabriel Sara, who obviously was playing as late as May in the Brazilian season. So we'll see how quickly it takes for him to come back, although it does feel increasingly like that number six role with Isaac Hayden in, if he turns out to be the player that perhaps we all hope he will be, that feels like it could maybe, and we spoke about evolution earlier, take Norwich to a different level in terms of his attributes coming to the fore as well. Should we talk Milo Rashica then, chaps, because obviously he didn't make the matchday squad. We're obviously recording this with a few days left of the transfer window. There'll be people who will be adding two and two and making five or whatever. What do you make of this, Pad? The fact he wasn't in the matchday squad, Dean Smith's comments after the game, he obviously didn't want to specifically say that they're related to the transfer window, but it does feel increasingly like Milo Rashica isn't in his immediate plans for the here and now for Norwich City's Championship promotion quest, which is what this season.
Absolutely. And while he was quick to dismiss it, following on from what he said on Friday, that there was nothing imminent, I think was the paraphrase on either him or Aaron, the two you probably reasonably expected once relegation was confirmed, maybe to be the ones who they'd move on to the benefit of all parties. He said on Friday it was not the case and was quick post-match Saturday, despite Rashica being set in the stands, albeit their marquee summer signing from the summer before, and he's not good enough to get into a championship match day squad, seemingly at the minute, that there wasn't a transfer subtext to that. But it doesn't look good, I think, for Rashica in terms of moving forward and his involvement this season. And a player there who was very highly rated in the Bundesliga summers before he came to Norwich, but then was brought to Norwich as, this is a guy who can help us to do what we need to do in the Premier League. That palpably didn't work out for either him or Norwich City. Is he going to be happy sitting on the bench, slashing the stand? I don't think so. So, and Norwich don't want an asset purchased at, for them, very great cost, sat in the stand or on the bench, depreciating. So I think it's really now a case of, is there a viable alternative in what remains of this window, which, to clarify, if anybody's not sure, is 11 p.m. UK this coming Thursday, September the 1st. So the clock is ticking, but we've all seen and observed from afar enough of these windows that it can be 68 months long, and it's seemingly the last 68 hours where things go ballistic, and hitherto scenarios that aren't in play suddenly are in play. So I don't think we definitively are going to say at this stage that Mia Rashica is still a Norwich player come Friday morning. But something will need to materialise to the benefit of all parties. And Smith, to be fair to him, on Friday last, made it quite clear that it does require a buyer. It does require a seller. It requires agreement between those two, but also, crucially, the player and his representatives. Now, we're talking hypothetically, but if there has been expressions of interest for Rashica, and maybe that wasn't to his liking at certain earlier parts of the window, now he's looking at the writing on the wall, and that not only is he not making the 11, he's not even making the bench. And Dean Smith, I thought, was quite pointed in what he did say. He said that, words to the effect that he did okay against Bournemouth in the League Cup, but okay doesn't cut it in terms of getting into his 11 or even his, you know, 18 as it is now in the Championship. So that was quite a cutting remark, I felt, and it indicated that no, he isn't part of his plans now, and maybe Sinani has bypassed him, and one or two others as well who could potentially play those type of roles on the right-hand side. So while there may be nothing that's of a tangible nature right here as we record this, let's see what the next 3 or 4 days bring. And you know, you could easily conceivably see a Bundesliga loan with a buy option maybe inserted, which gets him out and playing, and a bit like Jolles, puts him in a potential shop window, even though they've made it clear with Jolles they still feel he has a future at Carrow Road. That remains to be seen. But at least if it was a Bundesliga posting and he goes and plays there, then that could maybe develop into, if it wasn't that particular club, some other club taking him, because it clearly is in nobody's interest for this situation to prolong, which is Mia Rashica not even making Norwich's Championship squad. So if I had a pound and I was going to put it somewhere, I'd say it's probably on a departure. But as we sit here right now, for that to happen, other elements need to fall into place. And to take Smith at his measure from Saturday post-match, that isn't the case yet. So we'll see. But you know, I think that's a clear signal. If your manager's leaving you out, not only the 11, but the bench, probably time to look elsewhere, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And it feels like an age ago that Norwich City spent a significant amount of money on him ahead of their Premier League campaign and the excitement that was around that. And I wrote this a couple of weeks ago. He's got a brilliant knack of always feeling like he's going to do something without ever actually doing anything. I did see someone sum it up quite nicely, but it's probably not appropriate for this podcast, so I'll save that maybe for another day. What I did also want to talk about, and forgive me, gents, because we are going off on a bit of a Premier League tangent, but I'm going to make it relevant to Norwich, so bear with me. Obviously, yesterday we had Liverpool beating AFC Bournemouth 9-0. This is the fourth time this has ever happened. The first time was in 1995, Manchester United beat a certain team from Suffolk by that scoreline. Then happened again in 2019, then 2021, now 2022. That trend is concerning. It's obviously happened this time against a newly promoted club. And the way I was going to make this specific to Norwich is, how concerning is that for teams like Norwich, who do want to get or have aspirations of getting into the Premier League again, when the golfing quality is that big? I've watched a bit of Scott Parker's post-match press conference and said he wasn't particularly surprised by the result because of the difference in quality. It feels like we're getting to a stage now where, and there was obviously a lot of talk about the Super League and kind of these clubs wanting to break away and create this Super League. But in many ways, it feels like we're hedging in that direction anyway with the Premier League. So how difficult does it make it for teams like AFC Bournemouth, like Norwich City, who are promoted from the Premier League or into the Premier League, to then compete? Because for all the talk of financial power and money, which is ultimately where the conversation ends with the Premier League, that's not good, is it, for English football on a competitive basis, certainly in my opinion at least?
No, and you know, it comes down to what's the aspiration. I mean, yes, Norwich fans would love to have a club that's stable in the Premier League, but any visions of going on and achieving more than that in, you know, the mid to longer term, it feels almost impossible at this stage. You know, obviously, as you said, the amount of big wins, you know, now accruing is quite worrying. There was also a moment in the car yesterday where Crystal Palace were 2-0 up on Manchester City, and I believe it was you, Connor, that said, "Oh, well, this will end 5-2," and that didn't seem like a challenging idea whatsoever. Obviously, Manchester City went on and won 4-2 relatively comfortably, and I think that gap, that gulf, is not only sort of disheartening from a point of view of Norwich having to compete with those teams if and when they're next promoted to the Premier League, it's the idea that it's going to be so difficult for them ever to go on and achieve anything more than that, even with talk of potential investment or transfer of shareholdings and Mark Attanasio being involved, somebody who's worth $700 million, I think is the reported estimate, isn't even really going to be competing with the top half in the Premier League. And it feels like the opposite of a meritocratic system in football at the moment, that it's basically whatever club has the most money is going to achieve more. We've seen Newcastle spend, I think, £63 million on a striker in the last few days. And, you know, Norwich aren't getting near being able to compete with that. So you can see why it would be disheartening for football fans. And, you know, in a world which is increasingly catering to those top six clubs and decreasingly for clubs like Norwich, it's probably getting harder and less entertaining to be a fan of a club like Norwich. So it's definitely bad news in this part of the world that this gulf is getting bigger and bigger. I suppose the challenge is to try and compete. And that's probably why Norwich have felt they might need to go and get this investment from someone like Mark Attanasio, because otherwise they've got no chance really. And that's a sad resignation, but I think it's one that more and more football fans are coming to, unfortunately.
So for me, from my perspective, it leaves me feeling as a football fan, what's the point? What's the point of Norwich City, Bournemouth being in the Premier League when they go and the gulf is so big and that's not competitive. That's not good for English football. The fact that this is happening and it's happening with such regularity, it makes me feel as a football fan, you know, why would a team want to go up to the Premier League when that is what they have to face? And that is the increasing reality of facing teams like Liverpool, Manchester City. You can look at it and say, well, that's the challenge of trying to be in the Premier League and trying to bridge that gap. But it's becoming almost impossible now, really, for any team to do that. You know, Forest are obviously taking the approach that they're taking. You basically have to spend 100 million quid and you're still not in a position to be competitive. That for me feels a little bit broken, Paddy. I don't know about your view on this.
Well, I mean, when you see the transfer fees and the salaries that the top clubs now routinely spend, then football is broken, because that isn't sustainable. You know, it's a bubble that for many years was sustained by the broadcast revenue, and now it's increasingly nation states or proxies for nation states. If it requires that level of spend, then it will become a very exclusive elite and almost some sort of franchise system when you might reach the point where the NFL is in America, where there's essentially no relegation and you just have as I'm sure there's elements already in English football, we know with the breakaway project that fell down through the furious reaction of fan bases from most of those clubs who were rumoured to be involved. But that will come around again and again. And you know, we may eventually get that closed shop, essentially. And I think it's safe to say Norwich wouldn't be part of that. So then, you know, if you're a football fan, you may have to frame what your ambitions are within whatever structure you're taking part in. But, you know, there are examples. You know, Brighton have done it. Brighton have sustained and established themselves through very astute, okay, they've got a very wealthy owner, but through astute recruitment. And Brentford in more recent times, you know, Brentford have come up with Norwich. Again, they place a huge amount of play on the statistical element in terms of their recruitment, very astute recruitment, good coaching, the culture, the philosophy is there. And, okay, it's only one season sample, but they stayed up very comfortably last season and, you know, I wouldn't back against them doing it again. So there are routes to do it. But, of course, the question is not just staying up, but longevity. And, you know, Stoke and Burnley managed it, but eventually slipped down and haven't yet managed to get back. You know, it's very hard for those clubs, and Norwich are very much in that bracket, to hope for anything more than maybe a brief sojourn in the Premier League. And that's probably going to become increasingly difficult to actually sustain it. Yes, you can get up as long as the current structure stays in place, but whether you'll be able to do much more than Norwich and seemingly Bournemouth this time around is probably debatable. But it isn't a closed shop. It may feel like that when you see results like that, but there are examples to counter argument that, but they're few and far between. And I think ultimately with Norwich, if we bring it right round, you know, they got the recruitment badly wrong this time last summer. Fundamentally, the players they brought in didn't improve the squad who came out of the Championship. So I would like to see, before we basically declare that it's null and void and Norwich have no business even trying to get into the Premier League, I'd like to see them have had a proper crack at it, because I don't think any Norwich fan would think that was a proper crack last time round. And they spent, relative to Norwich, the sums of money that could have improved that group of players and at the very least would have made them competitive. And then, as Sheffield United proved a few seasons ago, if all the cards fall for you and your key players stay clear of injury, it is plausible, it is possible, it can be done. But clearly you need to get what you can control right, and that for me was recruitment. Then you need a huge amount of luck in terms of, you know, maybe how the fixtures fall, which Norwich and seemingly Bournemouth didn't get the rub of the green at the start of their respective Premier League seasons. But also I think injuries to key players, you know, if you lose, as Norwich did, the Pookies and the Tim Krulls at key moments, and the recruitment didn't improve them, then you've got no chance. So I'm not quite ready to maybe declare it, you know, game over for clubs like Norwich who have aspirations to get into the Premier League. But there's no doubt we're on a path, and it's moving at breakneck speed to a point where it will be very, very soon, I fear, unsustainable for clubs with Norwich's means, even with injections of cash from potential American impresarios to compete, firstly, but also to sustain themselves in the Premier League. And then I'm sure the debate will then rage, as it always is, as it already is, about, you know, what does that mean for English football and the health of English football? But, you know, you could almost argue that the Premier League is increasingly a closed shop anyway, and there's still below that, you know, four professional leagues and maybe a fifth if you include the National League, given the sums that are sloshing about at that level. So football will continue, but in what form, that's to be decided, I think.
Yeah, my theory is that we're getting to a Super League by stealth anyway. And like you said, I don't think we're necessarily there yet, but I don't think we're a million miles away from the three teams that come up, go down, spending 100 million in the process and then being financially in a very, very poor position for trying to get to the levels that will be in the Premier League at that point. And it is only heading in one direction, particularly given the increase in broadcast deals. We're seeing money increase rather than decrease. You're seeing now clubs in mid-table in the Premier League who are essentially able to go and buy players of any team who don't play in the Champions League because of the financial position of football globally. It all feels in quite a precarious position, but I didn't necessarily want to end this pod on a depressing note, but it feels like we've ended up there. But like you say, Pad, there are routes, there are means of doing it, and it's up to Norwich City to try and find a way to bridge that gap. But certainly from a feeling and how personally I feel towards the Premier League at this moment in time, that result probably did little to help that. A couple of things to mention before we finish the show. Sebastian Soto has exited, which is what I was going to say, but I've got my words in the wrong order, which is probably unexpected. He's probably in that camp along with Josh Martin, who I think Neil Adams and Dean Smith have now confirmed will be departing as well before the end of the transfer window. Feels like a little bit of a shame, certainly in Josh Martin's area. But the fact Norwich City have been able to presumably get some money for Sebastian Soto potentially makes that deal worthwhile. It was always going to be sort of low risk, high reward kind of recruitment, that one. But given all of the talk we have about the US of A at the moment, it's a little bit of a shame that one has slipped through the net, so to speak. And also, I don't think we covered this on our last pod, but shareholders' letters have dropped in relation to the Mark Attanasio investment. You can head to pinken.com and read a full explainer on that I wrote. We don't have enough time, nor do I anymore have the brain power to go through it. So that's the best place to go and read all about that. We'll, of course, follow it of interest. We're not a million miles away now from that general meeting on the 12th of September. So any more developments in that period, we'll, of course, as we have been at every single stage and will continue to be across that particular story as well. We're off to Birmingham, of course, in midweek. The Championship relentlessness continues. Hopefully Norwich City can record another win. They can maintain what has been, over the last few weeks, certainly a very positive period of time in the Championship, which I think everyone needed probably given last season and the start to this campaign as well. I think we've covered everything. Paddy, Sam, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll be back next week, of course, to look back on the Birmingham game. And your boys, Pad, are coming to town. Coventry City, you looking forward to that one?
Not really, given they're bottom of the table. So, yeah, I could do with Norwich in the first 60 minutes and Sunderland. I'm joking, of course. We all want the Norwich win, don't we?
He shakes his head. Good stuff. Thank you, Pad. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again very, very soon.